Good morning. It's 9 o'clock, and I'm excited to hear from Jody, so I think we should get started. This session is being recorded, and you'll be able to purchase it after the presentation ends. We ask that all cell phones be turned off and that those attending will be respectful and attentive. This session is Listen to Your Mother, Love is All You Need, from Jody England Hansen, and let's just go right to it. Okay.
So often I hear people saying, I wish I could find out more about Mother in Heaven. I'm not getting any answers from my bishop, my Sunday school teachers, you know, my fellow members. And I think, and then a lot of times when people say, we can't talk about her, you know, the things that we've heard for so long, we need to protect her. She's Heavenly Father is protecting her by not talking about her. And a lot of the dialogue about somehow any female manifestation of God is some kind of a little fragile thing that we need to get permission to talk about her. And so I want us to explore the many, many, many ways we can see the presence and the messages of the female manifestation of God, the mother manifestation of God, and the many ways she can show up. And so I want to begin by asking you to consider that mother and feminine and woman and female, these are constructs. These are things that have kind of developed in how we talk about them by how we talk about them. It's not some kind of single truth that exists and cannot shift throughout time. It has shifted throughout time. It changes depending on what culture you're in. But I'm going to ask you to consider that mother or motherhood, it's not automatically physical. Most people in our world's history who have the biological equipment to breed did not, do not, or will not actually bear children. And there are people who appear to be male but have many configurations of physical characteristics that do not align with what we as a culture would attribute to male. And this applies across the spectrum of expression and appearance. So frequently when we're talking about mother, for this purpose, I want us to consider the qualities, the characteristics, the things that we attach to mother in our conversation and how they might appear in the way God expresses themselves. So each culture and family and community expresses varying meanings and roles. And I think we as a Western culture, I hope, we're near a tipping point where we have to confront and we have to change direction as far as the horrible damage that comes with assigning narrow definitions to binary gender roles. Characteristics being assigned, they're either what men do or what women do. If someone does something that the other is supposed to do, then there's something wrong. And it's, you know, in the work that I'm doing with advocacy and especially suicide prevention, it's deadly. And a lot of times we don't realize how deadly it can be. But in this conversation, frequently it's what's keeping us from feeling the life of God in our lives because we have these gender roles. And when I was a kid and teenager and young adult, they just weren't that as powerful as they've been the last 25 years. And thank you, Proclamation. Thank you, Packer. You know, we can have the power to kind of shift that around, especially when we see how destructive it is. And we can do it in ways that can further the conversation with people who are really stuck in that. And I'm hoping we can look at some of those things. So we frequently hear the scriptures about my thoughts are not your thoughts, my ways are not your ways quoted. Usually when someone is trying to say, well, you don't want to do that because you don't want to do what God wants you to do, and I want you to do what God wants you to do, and God's ways are the way I'm doing it, and so I'm right and you're wrong. Again, we have an opportunity to read the scriptures as much more expansive than when a person is attaching them to themselves. So consider that there are ways of thinking, ways of expression, ways of living that are beyond anything we've done, had, experienced before. And those could be the way of God. It can invite us into something that we're not seeing anywhere else. And with that, we kind of step into the world of Godhood. And so some of the experiences I've had, I feel like that's what I'm invited to do. Now again, along this biological expression of mother, and also a part of the conversation I would like to see more people confront and consider and maybe address. In all of my experiences and interactions with God as mother, never has there been anything that suggests she was biologically pregnant with me or that my connection to her is in any way linked to a physical birth canal. So could we please, please, in a collective effort, please stop assigning the task of being eternally pregnant, interrupted with regular labor, to the feminine manifestation of something, some being that is indescribably powerful, incomprehensibly loving, and infinitely patient and ever-present and wise beyond our language. Probably she's laughing at our ridiculous ideas about her need to be protected. And her being and wisdom and presence call me into breathing and living and existing. She calls me into being by inspiration and invites me to breathe in greater wisdom and love. That is how she has birthed me, time and time and time again. That is how she teaches me to multiply and replenish the earth, by living such that others might be inspired to breathe and live a deeper, complex, messy, and loving life. Not long ago, I was visiting with a friend, and she had recently gone from participating in multiple callings and assignments at church to not at all. And she told me about how she had suddenly felt a desire to know about Heavenly Mother. She had dealt with church history issues and LGBTQ issues, and she had really navigated through that and was very active. But then she suddenly wanted, it's like she woke up one day and said, "What? I need to know Heavenly Mother." And so she did what she had always done when she didn't know where to go for answers. She went to her bishop and asked, and he didn't have answers for her. And she went to her stake president and asked, and he didn't have answers for her. And they kept telling her, you know, we don't need answers to this. Just, you know, just keep doing what you're doing and pray and everything. She doesn't need to be talked about. And she kept going back to them and saying, no, you need to tell me. You need to tell me where she is, and you need to tell me about her. And she got more and more hurt and upset, and she kept being going back. And then they became frustrated, and when she wouldn't stop, and they threatened discipline. And that did a complete, you know, turnaround in her experience at church. So she's telling me this, and she's so upset. And I felt deeply with her, I feel deeply with her, this hunger and this desire to know the mother. And I realized the habit of thinking we need to get our answers from leaders, and the mistake of thinking that the moment someone is set apart in leadership calling, somehow they're just imbued with awareness and knowledge of all answers to all questions. I personally haven't struggled too much with that because I've never really believed that. But I remember how hard it is for any of us to just say, you know, I don't know the answer. That's an interesting question. I don't have the answer. Can I help you in looking for it? Or I think this is an important thing for you to keep looking for. And how quickly that kind of response can create a connection and open up a dialogue. But we're afraid. And especially if we're in some kind of position of responsibility, it's really hard for us to say, I don't know. So I get leaders, that's where they go a lot. But I asked my friend why she would take her heartfelt, gut-wrenching questions to people who have no interest in those questions, who have never asked them, don't see the point, have never concerned themselves with this, at least not right now. And how could they possibly have an answer if they see no need to ask the question? And why do we keep going to people who see no need to ask the question? And I suggested she go to the source. I suggested she ask Heavenly Mother. And so she's embarking on a journey like that, which I know can be so rich and confronting and really wonderful. And I think of a couple of years ago when I was speaking at a gender studies inclusive family conference. Get them mixed up. An inclusive family conference, and I was on a panel of parents talking about, you know, how we've learned so much more because we love our children. And a young man asked me, what have you learned about gender through this? And I said, you know, I really love how I feel like God is teaching me that there are as many genders as there are people. And he just, as soon as I said that, it's like he just relaxed. He just needed to hear the words. And afterwards, I was talking to him, and he was in his late 20s at the time. He'd be in his early 30s now. But this wonderful young man, he's a transgender man, has a husband, and was telling me he was doing well. And I just thanked him for being there and his question and the discussion that came from it. And then he said, my mother hasn't spoken to me in 9 years. And I could hear the same kind of yearning that so many people I know who are just trying to see where she is. And I said, I'm sorry. Do you need me to hug you? And he said, I think I'm okay. I think I'm okay. And then he just kind of leaned into me a little bit, and I put my arms around him, and he just did not want to move as he just leaned into my shoulder. And after a long time, he said, I did not realize how much I needed that. And I said, I'm here. So many of us are here. Until your mother gets a little further along. We're here. And I realize we really just want our mother. Everyone just wants their mother. And to give each other permission to see her, in my experience, she's always there, always has been. And we're the ones who are not opening up and seeing how she can present herself, because we only see her in this rhetoric and the dogma that we've heard for so long. And it's impossible to see this ever-present, glorious, really compassionate, powerful being when we're looking for a shrinking, frail, eternally pregnant person. So acknowledge the need, be okay with it, and then be open to what could be there. But with my friend, when I said, go to the mother, and I gave her resources about poetry, and we have so many more than we used to. It's really wonderful. Several books at the same time about Heavenly Mother and poetry and writings and expressions and thoughts. It's really wonderful. And I said, and I referred her to these, and I said, don't expect Hallmark card verses. These are really moving, and they are heartbreaking, and they're about deep, bloody wounds and healing compassion and loss and enduring. And I think that's another reason a lot of times we don't want to see. Because we have this idea that if we see her, everything is just going to be nice, and chocolate chip cookies and cold milk and sitting on a lap and a kiss on what hurts, and then it goes away. And yes, that does happen, but I think the mother wants us to step towards wisdom and strength and acknowledge what about us is so deeply connected to her, and that can be difficult. For me, being open to the presence of her includes going deeper into the oppositions of life. There is no way to guarantee protection from assault or abuse or fear, from disease or loss or heartbreak or betrayal. What she has shown me is there is no limit to where and how God will show up and be with me, because God's love stretches wide as all eternity, and she invites me to live that love. And the invitation is part of our scripture repeatedly. All through the scriptures, there is God saying, I will be here. I nurture you. I gather you. I love you. Even more after things are difficult or when things seem to be impossible. And a lot of times we'll refer to things and say, well, it's in the scriptures. Yeah, it's in the scriptures. And the scriptures are full of things that are conveniently written by men. Sometimes, maybe women, I don't know. But occasionally in the scriptures, there is something that totally defies human teaching, completely goes against what humans tend to do. And this is where I think there is a great deal of inspiration and revelation. And we can recognize that. Section 121 is not a typical human teaching. To me, it really is a powerful description of how God works. For it to say when there's any degree of force or abuse or power in the name of power, there is no God. And so often rhetoric about God describes a harsh and distant, enthroned, unknowable being that needs to be appeased, who is looking for any reason to withhold blessings, eager to punish, micromanaging to inflict great harm, and then extending the slightest of blessings in order to keep us in line. You know, the parking lot, God. You know, the parking spot. Or, I found my keys, God. While countless women are murdered at the same time. That's just not a God that I want to approach. And I get that people will invoke the name of God and throw that God under the bus for the reasons that they wage war and commit genocide. So look for the expression of the God that invites in the space of all that. It comes through as so unlike what we as humans would do, that it is an expression of a present inviting and constant love and awareness. So again, that's why I see section 121 as being revelation. Other sections, 132 is a great example, are so clearly coming from a very human place of fear and bias and need to control. And the contrast is great. But the God of 121 that refuses to destroy enemies and that patiently teaches that the way the power of God really works offers very clear guidelines as well as warnings, almost as a gift. And this reveals to me the God who is there and inviting, even pleading with me, to see that we are all loved, that my pain and burdens are felt, and she is with me always, no matter what. It's really quite amazing because, as is typical, Joseph is pleading for God to take care of the problems and to smite the enemies. And God is saying, that's not how I work. I can't work that way. It's impossible. And I feel your pain. I am sorry. This hurts. And I am with you. And as a gift, during this difficult time, I'm going to tell you how things do work. It works through love and compassion and patience. And even when things are difficult, even when there is any suggestion from me that you knock that off, I still love you, and I will come back and show you how much I love you right after. And it's my ways are not your ways. I don't show you I love you by smiting your enemies. Those are my children too. And by the way, you wouldn't want me to do that because guess what? You mess up too. And the moment you do mess up, you got to realize this. You are not doing as God would do. Doesn't mean I'm not there. And I can just hear this through this section. And what it does is it teaches me what to listen to when I'm pleading. When I'm saying, please, why? What am I supposed to do? I'm listening for the God that is stepping in with compassion and love. Not, I'm going to fix it for you. Not, it's all okay because I'm going to get rid of the problem. It's look for the love, look for the compassion. I will help you be that compassion. I will help you stay in there and hang in there when it's really hard. And so often we'll hear warnings of you better not mess up because God can't be with you if you're messing up. You got to get things right before God can show up for you. And if any of your parents, or if you have parents, which by the way, you all do, I really hope that has not been your experience with a parent-child relationship. If anything, our loving God is there especially when we mess up, especially when we go into the darkness or when we've turned away to see God. And I can see how I have chosen at times not to see God when I'm in really dark places or refuse to accept that that is how God is showing up. Again, wanting just wanting God to come and take it away. And if God is not going to take it away, I can't see her. I can't. But I've learned to realize she's there. She is definitely there. A mother goes into the dark places with us and for us and would be there no matter what I'm doing. Time and again, we hear there is nothing that can separate us from the love of God. So I heard Fatima Saleh preach this powerful sermon last Sunday, twice. Affirmation Conference, and then at the Fireside at the Community of Christ. And one of the things that really got this round of applause, and why don't we applaud when it's a good thing in church? I don't know. Maybe because, well, I could go into how often it's worthy of applause, but then we could work towards making it that way. But she said, it's okay to be angry with God. I give you permission to be angry with God. When God doesn't show up the way we want to, God to show up. And I know what it's like when my children have been furious at me for not showing up the way they want me to show up. I know what it's like to just be assaulted by their anger. And I still love them, and I know they still love me. And I am sure that the mother is much stronger than I am in enduring my anger and my insistence that God fit into my tiny little ideas about how they should be. And we'll still show up. So it's okay to be angry. I know one woman, she talked about how she found healing because, and this was her first experience with Heavenly Mother, is she was so angry at Heavenly Father because her child had died. Just furious. And yet she felt this need to talk to God, and she thought, I've got Heavenly Mother, I'm going to talk to her about how pissed off I am at Heavenly Father. And she did, and Heavenly Mother just flooded into her life, just was there and listening and going, I get it. Yeah, this is horrifying. This is awful. Feel that pain. It's okay to be angry. I'll listen to you. Yeah, he can be a jerk sometimes, you know, and just this compassion, this feeling with, and she didn't worry about what was true about it. She didn't worry about, you know, any kind of doctrine fitting in. When we get to those deeply painful, dark places, sometimes we're so desperate we will allow things that we had never considered to reach in. And God, the Creator, will be creative in trying to get through and finding the way that I'll listen. In the traditional bias about women and assumptions about being subject to men, we framed this narrative about how she is supposed to behave. So what can each of us do to see a powerful manifestation of the feminine God, and how might that reveal personal experiences with her? And more importantly, how might that change our experiences as women or with women? Because so much of that is all swirled together. So much of our idea of what the feminine God might be is swirled up with cultural ideas about what women are supposed to be. So a friend of mine, she's long been a member of the state suicide prevention committee, even before it was the governor's task force. And she's been relentless in gathering statistics and stories and really creative in learning how to read them. She's gone to the CDC and said, tell me what these numbers mean. How do I read these? She gathers personal stories, and she will go way beyond what people are trained to do. And she gets education in all areas that impact this. And this is in addition to her profession. And she was talking to me about her concern that she was not being heard on this committee because she doesn't have the correct letters after her name. She doesn't have an MD after her name. She doesn't have a PhD after her name in a medical area. But those who are on the committee that have those letters after their name are not seeing the urgent need to do more to address the rising suicide rate. And interestingly enough, she's the only woman on the committee. She's the only mother on the committee. And she's definitely the only person where this issue has directly and deeply personally impacted her. And I told her she has the most important education experience of any of them because she is the mother who's been impacted by this. She provides the nurturing and the support to many people who are impacted by this. This is the work of our Mother God. She does not need to rely on someone's limited idea of who or what is valid. And we can learn to do the same. And I think this is where organizations, governments, and churches make a big mistake. Big mistake. And what is driving a lot of a shift, and inevitably it will have to come. You cannot have as your core any kind of universal salvation or importance of family things and then not recognize how mothers will rise up for their children. And when we see that things are not working in the way that our spirits are drawn and inspired, we will say, not in my house. Not in my house. And we won't leave. We will stay in that house and make it the house that we know it needs to be. Because we will not allow our children to die. And that is something I learned from our Mother God. Nothing will draw us and inspire us more than our need to stand up for each other. We can learn to do the same. And when I've opened my heart to that mother, and that is what has come through in deeply loving ways, transforming ways, shift in my molecules ways, that there is nothing more important than the love we have for each other, because this is the love we have for her children. And that we can experience her love for her children. And that is much more important than anything else. We will stand up for each other in ways that we never imagined. Last year, I met with a friend I had not seen for years, and she told me of her child that I had known as a young man years ago, who had often visited our home, and she said he is now claiming to be her daughter. And this friend, she's always been very nuanced in her belief. She has been affirming of her LGBTQ friends. But she told me that she felt she, as his mother, knew better than he did what his gender really was. She says, I'm his mother. I know. And she was wondering what she needed to do to help him see what she so clearly knew about him, because she is his mother. And it was really interesting, as I would speak to her and I would refer to her daughter and she would refer to her son during this conversation. And I asked her if she was so sure about her daughter that she was willing to give up having her daughter alive and present in her life. Because if she was insisting that her child could only exist in the way that she knew and expected her child to be, then her daughter would either choose to no longer show up around her, or she might choose to no longer live in this world. Either way, my friend was basically, I was trying to help my friend see, she was sending a message that she had no room in her life for her child to be different than what she expected. And in this case, and most cases actually, it only took a moment for my friend to consider this, and immediately she changed the pronouns and the name she used for her child to honor what her child was telling her. We do struggle as parents to learn to let go of what we expected. This is how life was supposed to look. And that is a constant role of a parent, to let go of what was expected and then embrace what is there. And when we embrace what is there, instead of struggling and insisting that it be what we expected, miracles show up. And beings show up that we never, ever expected in our life. So my friend Derek Knox is really this great scriptor, and he recently joined the church. He's openly gay, has this very powerful scriptorian background. He joined after the policy, fully aware of church history and the problems of the policy. And as he says, I didn't join the church. The church joined me in the work that I feel led to do in the world. And he's really an extraordinary person. He spoke at a panel last week at Affirmation Conference, and he refers this to the story in 1 Kings of the two mothers that come to Solomon with a dead baby and a live baby, and they're both claiming that the live baby is theirs. And Solomon says, cut it in half, and each of you can have half. And the real mother basically says, I would rather have my child alive in another house than dead in mine. We need to be willing to see that our child can be in a different place, in a different kind of life than what we envisioned, and living and thriving, then insist they remain in the narrow space that we had in mind for them. And this, again, is what Mother God taught me. She is there for me and with me as I create and choose my path, regardless of where it might take me. And when I've been so hurt by the actions, recently, of some people in my ward and my bishop and stake president a few years ago, and I was just so shocked and hurt and in pain by what had been done, and I was pleading with God to know what to do about going to church. And I felt God there hurting with me, saying, yeah, I hurt. This hurts. You can hurt all you need to, and you can go wherever you need to. You don't have to go to church. You don't have to go anywhere. I'm here. I will be with you where you are. Always. And when you want to overcome this with love and love people where you are, I will help you. I am with you. And that is what I turn to time and again, and realize it's the best thing we can do for each other. Let each other be where we're at. And when they'll let us be with them and help them to overcome with love. And I think Mother God is manifest in the good people around us who surprise us. How many have gone and seen the Mr. Rogers documentary? That's a manifestation of her. All the qualities that we attribute to God that are similar to the qualities we attribute to a mother, this is a manifestation. So this is from David Brooks' column about the movie called The Loveliness of the Little Good in the New York Times. The documentary demonstrates how Rogers' children's show got started and how he used it over 30 years to teach and accompany children. It describes the famous opening sequence, Mr. Rogers going to the closet, putting on the sweater, changing his shoes. It describes how he gently gave children obvious and non-obvious advice. You are special just the way you are. No children can't fall down the drains in the bathtub. And sometimes he would slow down time, be silent for long periods as he fed his fish. She might just be silent for a while. Doesn't mean she's not there. He talks about Mr. Rogers' actions during the civil rights era and assassinations. The power is in Rogers' radical kindness at a time when public kindness is scarce. It's as if the pressure of living in a time such as ours gets released in that theater as we're reminded that, oh yes, that's how people can be. Moral elevation gains strength when it is scarce. And here is the radicalism that infused that show. That the child is closer to God than the adult, that the sick are closer than the healthy, that the poor are closer than the rich, and the marginalized closer than the celebrated. Rogers often comforted children on the show and taught them in simple terms, but the documentary shows how he did so with a profound respect for the dignity of each child that almost rises to veneration. In the Gospel of Fred Rogers, children are our superiors in the way they trust each person they meet, the way they lack guile, the way a child can admit simple vulnerability. Rogers was drawing on the long moral tradition that the last shall be first. And David Brooks' quote. And I think that is the message of the mother, is that we can be the child again, in all good ways, and yet mature towards godhood in the way we embrace that part of being the child, loving and guileless and accepting of all. And I'm grateful for those who have remained a calm, consistent, loving presence in the world, even in the midst of terrible things, and they continue to be with and love and mourning, but steadily continuing to embrace all things as they are. A dear friend is dealing with much pain right now. He's trying to build bridges of dialogue between the church and marginalized groups. And being aware of criticism that's vocalized about his efforts. And it reminds me of my dad speaking of times when his thoughtful writings about the church had other members criticizing him for not being the right kind of devoted member, and those in his academic community who were not LDS criticizing him for having any connection with the church. I remember how agonizing this was for Dad. And I've experienced the same thing from various groups I am in. Too LDS for some, not the right kind of LDS for others. Even nuanced faith groups quickly move towards, this is the right kind of person here. You're not. And it's a difficult conversation to have, because that's where we go. We want to gather in our tribes. It's the whole reason so many are experiencing dissonance, because the people in the ward want everything to be their tribe. How easily we forget church is about inviting Christ. It's not about agreement. But we want to go there. And I can't imagine the pain my friend's feeling. And when asked what he needed, he said, please just love and realize that some of us are in a kind of a crossfire with bullets coming from both sides. Please try to shield us from the bullets. This kind of illustration, it's just all too real in this day and age. And I think that if there's any guidance about shielding each other from these attacks, it is from her. She helps me see that risking disapproval or position or agreement for the sake of helping another, to want to keep them breathing for another day, this is worth it. This is worth it. There is nothing more effective for suicide prevention or protection against harmful behaviors than unconditional love. It's the clearest, most challenging message that she has given me. In the book of Mark, at the beginning of the last week of the life of Christ, there is a woman who came and anointed Christ. She used the precious ointment reserved for royalty, placing her hands on him, her hands being the vessel of the ordaining oil, proclaiming through her actions the presence of the Messiah. She who had no title and no position, no official authority, using her hands in simple actions to recognize the Christ in this world. And even those who were followers of Christ criticized her. But Christ said, anywhere the gospel is taught, this will be mentioned. And how often in a lesson or sermon is this mentioned? So what I really never hear it mentioned in the conventional way that people are teaching the gospel. So again, Mother God invites me to see this through new eyes. And like the unofficial action of the untitled woman who acknowledges Christ as the Messiah, I can acknowledge the presence of God in the world by seeing them in all around me, by anointing each person, each action with my love, by helping others know the love of God because they know my love. This is the gospel, the good news that Christ taught with his life and actions, and that we can teach with our life and actions. In the Affirmation Conference, there was a testimony meeting, and all these people who love the gospel, who served missions, sharing the good news, who learned to seek answers, not from dogma or rhetoric, but directly from God, and who chose, because they are gay, paths in and out of the church with spouses and families that love them. And some continue to participate in all the ways that they can with the church community because they feel led to do so. And it was poignant how many of them mourned and said, the hardest thing is I'm not allowed to take the sacrament. And last Sunday at the fireside, at the Community of Christ, the fireside of three witnesses, all women were speaking and blessing and administering the sacrament, offering the blessing of God's love. I was honored to be invited to offer one of the prayers for the people. We as human beings love to get a hierarchy going. We love to put things on a pedestal or create idols. But Christ took bread and tore it as he would be torn. He offered it as a symbol of taking God within us and allowing ourselves to be literally nourished by the symbol as it feeds us physically. Bread is flour and water and salt and oil. I can do that. I can bring what is mundane, ordinary, and mix it with my hands. I can declare it precious, holy with my love. I can offer it to others, those who are rejected, excluded, told they are less than, who are refused by their own. It is sacred when I say, you are a part of me and we are a part of God because of love. There is no title needed, no permission sought to sanctify with love, transforming ordinary items into holy emblems, and invite the Christ to be present in our lives as we break bread, consume it together, to be nourished physically and spiritually by the bread of life, as we become as our mother would be and listen to the pleas. We have a few minutes. If anyone wants to question, share experiences or thoughts, just come to the mic.
That was awesome. How do I get the last quote that you just read? And what books or things about Mother God do you suggest or recommend?
Right here, there's Dove Song. Is that mic on? I just want to make sure it's recorded. So, I don't know which quote. Is it the quote from my...
The last thing you read about the sacrament?
Oh, my quote. Okay. Yeah.
Can I get that?
Yeah. And it's on the recording too, but yeah. And the books that are out now, there's Mother's Milk, Rachel Hunt Steinbeck, and Dove Song. Those are the ones that you can get right here, right now. They're the newest ones. And then you go online for the BYU studies called A Mother There. And those are quotes throughout history by leaders and people within the LDS community about Heavenly Mother. Yeah. So that's the start, but I know there are other things in the works. Great things, so.
I've become really grateful over the last few years that we actually don't have a lot of information about Heavenly Mother, especially from a hierarchy that tells us what she looks like and what she does. I'm grateful that we don't have an Old Testament mother who demands genocide or strict obedience. Or, you know, I'm grateful that I had to find her on my own. I'm grateful that I, you know, got to make her my own and that I have my own relationship with her. And that's more of a comment than a question, but
do you want to share any of that about what you found as you've sought her on your own?
Well, she's the one that I complain to. I, you know, my whole life I've been taught to really respect the Father, and so I just don't have that relationship with him. You know, counsel not the Lord. And so, you know, I don't. I go to Heavenly Mother. I complain with her. And I also just enjoy her. When things kind of happen in my life that feel kind of coincidental but kind of motherly at the same time, I attribute those things to her, and I just, you know, I see you. You know. And I think my own mother died when I was young, mm-hmm. and so I've always sought and needed mothers. And so I think that has also been part of that dynamic in my life.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think it's interesting that And I'm grateful for you sharing so generously that you had this need and it made you willing to look and listen. I think that's really important. Yeah.
I apologize because I came in late, but I have kind of shifted my prayers and my belief the last few years as far as having a woman present and a mother present, and because I was so excited or thrilled when people started talking about Father and Mother in heaven, and yet there's still this element of me that, like, not just thinks she's only a woman maybe, but I think I'm just curious to get your perspective on who you visualize when you pray, and again, maybe you already talked about that, and because I go back and forth and sometimes just envision angels or just my mother, because it's just my whole paradigm has shifted about family, and don't even believe in the family proclamation. You know, you just suddenly just go, maybe it's just a woman, and maybe it alternates. And so I'm just curious, like, your prayers and your theology, and I mean, that's broad, but just and any other perspective on that, because I really just, that's so, you know, to picture a woman in the feminine energy is so much more powerful, and sometimes I just envision the Lord or God having those female characteristics, and Christ as well, because Christ has so many female characteristics.
Really excellent. And by the way, you don't need to believe in the proclamation on the family because it doesn't believe in you. There are these little tidbits in there that are actually, you know, quite good and are based in our universal salvation theology. But they are definitely mixed in with a very narrowing legalistic legal brief, which, by the way, is what it is. That's why it was written, to be a legal brief. Who I picture or what I picture, and it shifts. And I think having experience where I've opened up a lot of awareness and understanding and experience with people who are gender fluid, has made me recognize that so much of our conversation about the gender of God has to do with our conversation about gender roles in our community. And for us to only frame God in such a destructive way, conversation really narrows down what we can experience. And so when we let go of that, and so what I see is that God shows up all across the spectrum. And at any time, what I am experiencing, any kind of visual picture or emotional experience with God, if I attach, oh, that's mother right now, or that's father, or that's both, or it's both together in a being, it's multiple beings, I am giving language to it that has more to do with the language of my culture. But that's okay. It's all I've got. And that it's very possible that the actual presence and manifestation of God as force or power or beings, and I do think it's beings in my experience. There are just so many that I feel deeply, intimately connected with, is beyond what our language lets us see. So my personal theology keeps coming back to this is not a distant, hands-off being. That's our conversation. It's one of the main reasons I think we need to find a way to set aside patriarchy. We've got to. Not only are we shutting so many people out of the conversation, but we're shutting God out of the conversation. Because time and again throughout scriptures, I think those expressions of God that are nurturing and present and merciful and compassionate, that the section 121 God, keep getting drowned out by this idea of the conquering army, the group in control that pretty much determines so much of the record of civilization, needing to present a harsh military God. And it's up to us, individually as well as collectively, to just go, that's interesting that general king, given the title of prophet person, presents God in that way to justify their actions. And acknowledge, yeah, of course that's what they're going to do. Even as they go on their knees to the prophetess and ask for help. So, again, it's a whole civilization shift conversation, and we can be a part of it. Because, what is it? Not in my house. Not anymore. Not going to do this anymore. I am not going to send my children into war anymore. I'm not going to let that happen anymore. So, yeah.
Hi, Jody.
Hi, Mark.
We're good?
I think it's on.
All right, well, just wanted to share an experience that I had when defining, when you were talking about here and some of the questions about who is Heavenly Mother, kind of lost the idea of this patriarchal God a long time ago. And with it's the idea that there's a discrete being who's at the top of the universe that, you know, controls everything. That's a very, I mean, it's a monarchical sort of thing. It's the idea of a king. And our Book of Mormon speaks against kingmen, you know, the idea of this hierarchy. And there's such an interesting, the Book of Judges speaks of Deborah, you know, as being the prophetess. And she was the high priest. Yes. I mean, it was like, you know, how does this compute? You know, she was the prophet. She was the people to whom everybody deferred. And later there's an interesting story in Hosea about, you know, Hosea marries Gomer, you know, and this and has three children that are...
The unloved, the unwanted, the unneeded.
Yeah, yep. And it's very deeply symbolic. But there's something that connects Hosea to Judges, and it's this incident at Gibeah, which is a very unfortunate incident of a woman who was a concubine, however you want to call her, and she was abused by her Levite husband, and they go to Jerusalem, and her father implores them to stay, and they come back, and they pass, when they're returning, they pass through a town called Gibeah, and this town plays out the Sodom and Gomorrah incident. And in doing so, this Levite thrusts this woman out of his concubine, out of the house, where she is raped all night long and left at the stoop, and he doesn't bother to protect her, he doesn't do anything. When she's out at the stoop, she's dead. Puts her on a mule, takes her back to what was he from? He was from Bethlehem, and he cuts her in 12 pieces, sends it to the 12 tribes, and they all get upset, and they basically kill off all the men of the tribe of Benjamin. This is just before Saul. Now, this resulted in everybody demanding that there'd be a king. That's why the king happened. And in Hosea, you have God speaking to Hosea and saying, you know, you, Israel, wanted to have kings, and I gave you kings, bad kings, all the way through. And you didn't realize that if you just came to me in love and turned to me, and, you know, I would, you know, want you and need you, you know,
and love you.
And this principle of love, and I remember when my mother was dying, she had lost her mind. She had multiple fractal dementia, so she was, you know, losing her mind. And she couldn't speak for months before she died. And it was Mother's Day just before she died the next weekend, we talked, and she said twice, "I love you, Mark. I love you, Mark."
Mm-hmm.
And last year, and this is, a decade or so ago, last year I went through this meditation on the atonement, and the voice of the Lord came to me, and it was my mother's voice, and she said, "I love you, Mark. I love you, Mark." And I don't know who God is, you know, in terms of I know God from the experience that I've had with this divine presence, and this divine presence is very feminine to me because it's my mother speaking to me. Now, see, I can't picture this some sort of big king sort of thing because it doesn't work anymore. But that love that I experienced just changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, thanks, Jody.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, and it is wonderful what can show up when we're hungry enough for it. Yeah, go ahead.
I just checked the time. Do we have to end right at 9?
We have a few minutes.
Okay. Just a quick story and a question. So I was called to be the enrichment person in my relief society, and I had been previously invited to another ward, their Mother in Heaven Fireside.
Oh, wonderful.
Missy McConkie, I don't know if you know her. Anyway, it was changed from the church, and the Relief Society president said, okay, we do it in my home. And it was completely wonderful. Afterwards, everyone was out on the street talking. People didn't leave. They didn't want to leave. So in my calling, that's something I suggested to a very conservative Relief Society president. But she, I told her the whole experience, and she said, yes, we must do this. But then, by then, Mother in Heaven had been acknowledged in the SA. Maybe just in conference. Somewhere. And I thought, we can do it at church. But our bishop, who was a friend, just pulled it. He said, we can't do that. And it was the state presidency. So our Relief Society president said, we do it in my home. It was amazing. We had mostly women, some men. The place was packed. The conversation continues in less of a way than I would prefer. But I gave a talk on Mother's Day, and she was in that. And then there's the question of prayer, and that's the thing I want to ask you. So at home, I pray to Father and Mother in Heaven, you know, with my husband, although he only prays to Father because he's more comfortable that way, and totally fine with me. The last prayer I gave at church, I prayed, "Dear God in heaven," and it completely worked for me. But so when we get to Relief Society or something, it's harder for some reason to sort of go off the, you know, the talking points. I just want to feel comfortable with what I say. I'm interested in what you say in a public prayer. So that's the question.
Really good question. And I think you pointed out some great things to consider. Where is the setting? What is the purpose? So I gave a prayer last year at the Affirmation Conference, and I prayed to God in the spectrum, across all spectrums of genders and colors and experiences and voices, and because that was completely what was clear to me was appropriate for that setting. In sacrament meeting, it's a different setting. When I pray in sacrament meeting, I do pray to Father in heaven. And God knows where my heart is. But I'm not there to turn it into a soapbox. So in the conversations, in the comments, I speak very comfortably about God as heavenly parents. And I always refer to heavenly parents in my comments. But the comments are always Christ-focused, gospel-focused, not rhetoric-focused. And so it's not so much in your face, it's more along the lines of letting it become the water people swim in. And so I look at where I am and what that purpose of that gathering place is, who might be there, And here's the big one, and again, she has helped me see this. Am I doing it to irritate someone? Am I doing it to be in your face? Or am I doing it to express love? And I promise you, my habit and my skill is really good to be in your face. I'm very good at that. And so I rely heavily on learning how to listen to that voice. And sometimes it's my father's voice. Sometimes it's different ancestors that I'm very familiar with. And sometimes it's that deeply sacred mother voice. And it's, it'd be better if you kept your big mouth shut right now. And other times it's now. Say it now. Say heavenly parents. Name heavenly mother. So when you listen and your heart can come from a place of love, you'll know. When I prayed at the prayer of the people on Sunday at Community of Christ, it was perfectly appropriate to talk about all manifestations of a Mother God. And so look at what the purpose is, and you'll be heard. And because I could have gone all in your face at Community of Christ. You can do that anywhere. You know, don't ever assume that just because it's different from an LDS congregation, you can get up there and wave your I told you so flag, and you're not going to get anywhere. It's going to fall really flat. Look for opportunities to further the conversation forward and to introduce love into the space. And that's what I feel guided to do. Although there are times I just want to rip someone's head off. As a mother. So.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay.
Hi.